Welcome to After the Credits, episode 288. I am your co-host, Brain Antunes, and joined today by special co-host
Bill Harris, Green Screen of Death. How the hell are you, Marina?
I am very well. How are you doing, Mr. Bill?
I'm pretty good. I think the last time I talked to you, we were at VIFF.
Oh, shit. It's been that long, eh?
Yeah, we were at the library downtown recording our top 10 list, and I was going to a movie, and I was super sad that I was leaving all my friends.
And I was going home to sleep.
Yeah. Yeah. It's been a while. Cool. So like October. Yeah, it has been a while. It's October-ish.
Jesus. It's been like more than 6 months. That's crazy. It's,
oh, yeah. Well, this really weird thing happened in the world and everything kind of got screwed up. So, yeah. I think we all had plans.
I'm pretty sure everybody had plans. I know for sure Dan had plans to go to Vegas, and that ain't happening anytime soon.
Oh, yeah. Unless he's wearing a full hazmat suit.
Oh, man.
Yeah.
So bad. So, I mean, the weird thing has been tracking the whole movie landscape for the last couple of months because it's been ever-changing, and it's I hate to say that 2020 is kind of a write-off, but it kind of feels like it. I mean, there's still movies coming out, really good ones.
Yeah.
Well, I don't know. It's weird not going to the movies.
That's just the thing. Like, there's theaters open in my town. There's 3 theaters open.
But will you go?
No.
Not me either.
I went and saw one just to kind of see how it was, and I didn't feel comfortable. I kept on thinking about it. I'm just like, this is really weird. Yes, there is social distancing and it's good, but I still don't feel safe. So I did it once and I'm not going to do it again. Like until Tenet hits probably. And then I'll force myself to go. Or like a big movie like Mulan or something like that. But until then, I think I'm good. And that freaks me. That kind of freaks me out, actually.
Yeah, I like watching
movies.
Yeah, and I'm with you. I'm kind of in the boat where, like, there's basically like maybe 3 movies that would get me out to the movies this year at this point: Tenet, Wonder Woman. Well, 4: Tenet, Wonder Woman, Top Gun, and Dune. And
Top Gun.
Top Gun. I love movies, but I don't think I love movies enough to put my life in danger.
No.
I may have to skip the big movies this year if I can't see them some other way, because I'm pretty certain I'm not comfortable going to a movie theater anytime soon.
Well, don't worry. Like with the spikes in California and New York, Tenet isn't opening.
No, it's never coming.
It's never coming out.
I agree. That and Mulan also never coming out. They've pushed that thing like 5 times already.
They should call Tenet tentative because it's never coming out.
Bam.
Yeah.
Right there.
Yeah.
Oh.
Or we get to watch it just like Christopher Nolan intended it on an Apple Watch because like it's literally going to come to iTunes.
Not even on your iPhone. On your
Apple Watch.
The smallest screen possible.
I saw somebody watching Portrait of a Lady on Fire on an Apple Watch a couple days ago. It just made me laugh like crazy.
I'm sorry. I didn't know you could watch videos on your Apple Watch. That's ridiculous.
Yeah, it's pretty good.
Oh, Jesus.
Like, how could you even read subtitles?
That's, well, you can't.
Yeah.
Well, maybe you can. I don't know. But I mean, all of this to say, you know, I do miss going to the movies and I miss watching movies with friends. Not that I don't like watching movies with Dan and the family, but it's nice to be able to share movies with other friends. But that's not to say that there aren't movies.
No,
there's been some good stuff.
Like we're lucky that our main festival has gone online.
Yeah.
Like a lot of people can't say that. Like my friend Will Lindis got the double whammy. He was a week away from South by Southwest. Bam, canceled.
Yeah.
Fantastic Fest, canceled. Like, his big movie year has been destroyed.
Yeah.
Whereas we get TIFF, Fantasia, VIFF, all online, streamable in Canada. So we're still good. And there's still really good movies coming out VOD. Like, I'm shocked at how good the VOD has been. But those movies would have opened theatrically.
For sure.
So we're getting all those at home, which is cool. But I'm super gonna miss going to Vancouver and seeing you guys. Like, that's a big thing in my year. Like, it's not just the movies. It's the social aspect of VIFF that I'm totally going to miss, and it's going to suck.
No, exactly. Yeah, exactly.
Yeah.
It's the sharing and the seeing friends and talking stuff and stuff and just hanging out. It's sad.
Yeah.
But, I mean, let's talk some movies. There have been movies. I know you've probably watched like a gazillion movies.
How big is your list?
I mean, we recorded like 4 weeks ago, and I've been a little – like I've been trying to catch up on TV, so it's not as long as I would like it to be. But it's got some stuff on it. I don't know, like 10?
Okay. I might have more, but
– Okay, I know you do. So why don't you start, and I will jump in when you talk about something that I've seen.
Okay, cool. Awesome. So the first film is Spaceship Earth. Did you see that one?
I did.
It's a really strange film.
Totally strange film. I totally remember Biodome as well.
Do you?
I totally don't.
The
craziness of it.
I saw all this video and I'm like, I should have remembered this. Like this was like, I was alive when this happened. Why don't I remember this? Because it's that kind of strange. These hippie people just decide they're going to like build a biodome kind of thing and live in it within a year. And they're not really prepared at all. They just hire some people and just build it, and stuff goes wrong. What a shock. Yeah. I was like, this is really strange. I should have liked this more than I did. This should have been up my alley. This is kind of like a nerdy kind of film. I kind of didn't like it. I didn't like the people. I thought that everybody was, stupid but incredibly smart. I don't know. It just kind of rubbed me the wrong way. Like you're just wasting all this money and you literally have no idea what you're doing.
Yeah. The thing that surprised me the most is one, I mean, I was vaguely familiar with Biodome because I'd seen about it and heard about it over the years, but I didn't actually know any of the history of it. So the fact that it came out of this sort of hippie commune thing was a huge surprise and a big shock. I'm with you. I didn't care for any of the people involved. They all kind of come across as, like you say, very smart, but also like really stupid in the simplest things. But overall, I actually did enjoy it. And I think what impressed me the most is the fact that after all of this debacle, you know, a group of them are still together, like to this day, like, you know,
yeah,
40 years later, these people are still like, they are completely committed to this communal living. And to me, I thought that was really, really fascinating and really, really interesting.
Yeah, that was great. I had no problem with that. And also really weirdly, out of the blue, Steve Bannon shows up.
Yeah, right?
Really,
I was like, is that the same Steve Bannon? It was so bizarre.
A really young and thin Steve Bannon. But you can tell it's him.
Yeah, totally.
Fuck him. But yeah, I didn't think it was bad. It just, the people rub you the wrong way. I don't know why. And it just, I couldn't recover from it. It's still pretty interesting though. But I just wish the people were a little bit more smart. A trip to Greece. Did you see this one?
I did not.
The Rod Bride and Steve Coogan, once every couple years, trip around a city in Europe where they just eat food and talk.
Yeah, I know you guys, you and Adrian are big fans of this sort of like loose series. I don't think I've seen any of them. So I will at some point catch up. It just has not been high on my priority list as of late.
I just think they're really funny and they're quite I like the two of them together. The dynamic has changed throughout the movies. Like Rod Brydon used to be the one who wasn't very popular, and then he started getting Hollywood movies. And they kind of wrote that into the movies, how Coogan starts to get really jealous of him. It's quite good. Coogan's really good. He's such a smarmy asshole. And Bryden's just the regular guy who just is happy to be there. I find them really charming. I think they're really underrated. And I wish more people talked about them. I think they're really great. So I hope you get the chance to see them one day.
I may have to add them higher to my list.
Yeah, they do really great impressions. It's so funny.
Damn it, like them. So yeah. Maybe we will have to try to watch some of these.
The King of Staten Island.
Oh, yeah.
Pete Davidson, more or less his life story. Pete Davidson's dad died in 9/11 as a fireman. And this is sort of like a very loose retelling of his life and how Pete Davidson went on to SNL. So he wasn't a stoner, like burnout guy, but in the movie he is. And I liked it. It's the new Judd Apatow film. So to me, that automatically means it's a half hour too long, because all his movies are. This movie feels a little bloated, but it's good. Yeah, Davidson's really good. And I really like Belle Pauly, who I think is a really underrated actress.
Agreed.
Yeah, she's really fun in the film. And yeah, it's definitely watchable. I kind of expected not a lot from it, and I was kind of surprised by it, actually.
I agree with you 110%.
Did you see – I think you saw this live. I think you remember telling me you saw this. Roger Waters made a concert film called Us Them.
Yep.
He did a big tour, and he came to – and I missed it in Vancouver, and I was super pissed. It's good, but it needs a little more David Gilmour. I'm sorry.
Oh, no shit, right?
Yeah.
I'm with you 150% here. I've seen now Roger Waters twice. I saw him the first time he started touring with The Wall. And then I saw him a couple of years ago because Dan hadn't gone the first time. So I dragged Dan along because I thought, you know, he needs to see Roger Waters before Roger Waters croaks. And it's great. The music is great. And, you know, he puts on a good show. But it's not Pink Floyd.
No, it's really not Pink Floyd. And he always has somebody singing the David Gilmour parts.
Yeah.
And never as good. You're not David Gilmour.
No.
Yeah.
David Gilmour's on another level.
And unfortunately, David Gilmour sang pretty much every good Pink Floyd song. So it's very hard. But it's the theatricality of the performance is amazing.
Oh, yeah.
And Roger Waters is really charismatic. And it's really great. But man, if they have a big giant COVID concert, Pink Floyd.
Yeah, I'm pretty sure Gilmour and Waters are not seeing
eye. Yeah,
there was some story recently about, I think Waters wanted rights to a bunch of songs, and Gilmour said basically fuck off. So I don't think a reunion is happening anytime soon. Sadly,
we can dream.
Yeah, we can.
Did you see the new Spike Lee film, The Five Bloods?
I did. I really liked this. I mean, Spike Lee is kind of hit and miss for me, to be totally honest. Like, I don't always understand or appreciate his politics, though his filmmaking is always good. I really, really, really liked this. I thought it was a tiny bit long.
A tiny bit?
Yeah.
Hey, man. It's 2 hours. It's 2 hours and 40 minutes.
But I mean, we watched it in one sitting.
Yeah,
so it's
I know.
Not like we turned it off at any point, which, you know, Dan tends to do when he gets bored with Netflix. He starts, you know, turning and playing on his phone, and I know he's not interested. So that didn't happen. So we did watch it all in one sitting. So I can't say it's too long for that. But generally, I thought it really worked. I found the ending a bit long-winded and kind of crazy. But I mean, the whole movie is kind of crazy.
Yeah.
But I mean, the politics are so on point. Like they usually are, but this time even more prescient than before. And I mean, Delroy Lindo is like fucking killing it.
Yeah. Killing it. I like how Spike always gives his main actor like one scene where he like talks to the camera.
Yeah.
And the Delroy Lindo scene where he talks to the camera is like his Oscar scene. Like,
oh, for sure.
It's just intense.
It screams.
Yeah. It's incredible. Yeah. That movie could have been 2 hours long, and it would have been better if they had eliminated all the bomb people. It would have been great. I don't know. It's really good. I am a big Spike Lee fan. I think Do the Right Thing is the best film of the 80s.
Agreed.
Full stop. Yeah, I think it's really good. I just don't think it's great. A lot of people are saying it's like the best film of the year. I'm not going to go there. I don't think it is, but
no, neither do I.
It's really good. All the actors are incredible, but yeah, it's good. It's not great. Did you see Artemis Fowl?
Okay, no, I haven't seen this yet. I heard the stink, so I kind of stayed away for a while.
It shouldn't even be called Artemis Fowl. he is like the third character in the, like in the rankings. There's like two other characters who have more screen time than Artemis Fowl. He's such a forgotten character in the film for maybe 50% of the film. It should be called not Artemis Fowl. It's such a mess. To think that Disney wanted to put this out theatrically kind of freaks me out. It's really bad. It looks good. Kenneth Branagh shot the film. Like he's a pretty good director.
Yeah, he knows what he's doing.
But yeah, it sucked. Yeah, it was really bad.
Yeah, because the book series is like super popular.
Supposedly the movie is like the first two books smashed together to make this giant piece of crap.
Ooh.
I didn't like it at all. I think it might actually be the worst film I've seen this year. Yeah. But that's just me. Do you like the movie Showgirls?
Sure. I would say sure.
I watched a documentary called You Don't Know Me about Showgirls and the fandom that has come up over the years where people think it's like a great cult film now. And I don't agree. I think it's a really terrible film, and I don't, I get like Rocky Horror, I get all these cult films. I don't get Showgirls. That movie just sucks.
Admittedly, I haven't seen it in a very long time, but
the documentary is actually kind of interesting. Just how Paul Verhoeven's kind of a weird dude.
And, oh shit!
Yeah, and all of his movies are kind of the same, like really weirdly titillating for no reason, like Starship Troopers, like this like alien combat film, and hey, let's just go and have a naked shower scene for no reason with like both men and women. It's like super strange, but it's a Paul Verhoeven film. Mm-hmm. Like all of his films are the same, and he really thought that Showgirls was serious until it bombed, and then he changed his mind and made it a comedy in his mind. Like Verhoeven's a weird dude. It's worth watching the documentary just for the Paul Verhoeven stuff. And Elizabeth Berkley got destroyed by that film, and she was like a kind of a star off Saved by the Bell, and mm-hmm. she like barely worked again. And
that's sad.
Yeah, and she talked about how like she gave her like absolute heart to that film, and everything that was wrong with her performance was because of Paul Verhoeven saying amp it up. So, and it made it really kind of strange, but it's a pretty good documentary. It's called You Don't Know Me. It's on VOD. I quite liked it.
Nice.
Did you watch the Eurovision movie?
Okay. So we just watched that this past weekend.
Nice.
And it could quite possibly be the most glorious thing Netflix has ever released. I love this movie.
The songs are great.
The songs are amazing. But what gets me is that I had to go and look to see who wrote it, because I'm like, whoever wrote this clearly has a passion and an understanding of the craziness of Eurovision. And to find out it was co-written by Will Ferrell, I thought, really? Wow, he really does like Eurovision. Because I'm sorry, if you're just like a standard, like nonchalant fan of Eurovision, you don't understand the greatness of this movie. It encapsulates all of Eurovision.
Okay, so amazing. I really didn't know too much about it.
Oh.
So I went on YouTube and looked like top 10 Eurovision performers. There's some fucking weird ass like costumes and like weird metal bands and
just oh, yeah.
the weirdest stuff. And then you have like ABBA.
Yep.
Like, what the hell?
Well, I mean, for those that don't understand the craziness of Eurovision, I mean, it's been around for, well, as long as I can remember. And if you're European, you've probably at some point in your life watched the song contest. Because, I mean, it's a big thing across Europe. Because the countries each have their own, like, internal competition to pick the song that they're going to send to Eurovision. And, like, there's tons of politicking. And every year it's like, why the fuck did you pick that song and that artist? It makes no sense. And, like, since basically ABBA, I would think, most of the songs have always been in English, which has always been an irky thing for me. I hate it. So that's the thing, like this, the history that they've managed to capture within this really ridiculous comedy is so true to Eurovision and to everything that's comes with it, that it's just like the whole thing is just shockingly amazing to me. It's so good.
You know, and the next day I'm like, Volcano Man.
Yes. There's so much good stuff here, but I the songs really, really do kill. Like, they are really, really good songs. I was all in. It started, I'm like, this is great. I want all of this.
Rachel McAdams is really great. Oh, she's fabulous. And the super underrated Dan Stevens, who could pretty much
totally
do,
hilarious.
Who could pretty much do anything.
Yeah, pretty much.
Yeah, it's a fun film. I don't think it always works, but man, when it works pretty well. Kind of a surprising film, actually. I shouldn't have liked that. And I did.
How can you not love that music though?
The music. That first opening video of Volcano Man, I'm like, oh my god, this is kind of good. What the hell?
Yes, but, I love the soundtrack.
Yeah, it's good. Did you see? Okay, so ESPN did the Last Dance, yes. Chicago Bulls documentary, yep. and then after that they did it a couple more. Did you see the Bruce Lee one?
No, I actually did see that came up, but I haven't watched it yet.
It's really good. Lots of really good footage of most the stuff that really got me. They had like really great footage of his funeral, which I'd never seen before, and just how there was like 10 million people out when he died in China. Like,
wow,
they took him down the street, and there was like 10 million people out there. It was unreal. Like, he was such a hero to everybody. And could you imagine if he had lived? Like,
oh geez,
he would have been the greatest action star of all time. And he already is.
Yeah, exactly. Like,
it's unreal. Criterion just put out a new Bruce Lee box set. Amazing. I bought it. It's freaking spectacular. Bruce Lee Forever.
Is that one on Netflix too, or is that one just on ESPN?
I caught it on TSN in Canada. TSN,
okay.
So I don't know if it's on Netflix, but okay. It's definitely worth watching if you get a chance. I know you've seen this one, and I'm going to say this is the horror film of the year, and it's not a horror film. The Assistant.
Oh, so good.
This movie really made me feel gross.
Yes.
It's a fictional film company that might have been run by Harvey Weinstein. And the employees around him getting just absolutely destroyed by this giant ego of a man. They wanted the film to actually be Harvey Weinstein, but they were going to get sued. Mm-hmm. So that now they actually just never show the person. You just hear his voice. And his assistant, just the whole movie is just her getting destroyed.
Yeah. The thing that really I found really impressive about this, I mean, the performances are fantastic. And I think the fact that you never actually see the boss is probably even more effective. What I thought was really interesting is the fact that, like, even the small things that happen like almost every day, the small indiscretions that you never even really think about, like the getting the coffee, and like those are the kind of things that assistants do every day and are told to do every day. But it's so demeaning when you see it on screen happening constantly, and then you add in all of this other bullshit that's like related to the abuses that are going on, you know, behind closed doors. And you start to think, wow, like the shit that we put up with, if you work in an office in like any sort of assistant position or anything that's not like managerial, the crap that you put up with every day that's so demeaning when you pile it all on top of each other, it just made me a little bit sick. And I thought, you know, how many jobs have I had where this has happened to me? And I always just took it as part of the job. The fucking guys that I worked with never had to do that.
No.
So that to me was probably the most eye-opening thing, because it's the kind of thing that I've experienced that I'd never really thought about. And seeing it all together on screen over a period of 90 minutes is like, it makes you really angry and really upset. And just the realization that you've had similar experiences that you've always just kind of wrote off as normal is just so heartbreaking.
And the fact that it's not day one, it's probably like day 100 of her taking this makes it even worse.
Yeah, it's so sad.
And the fact that the director a couple times in the movie just plants the camera on her face, and it's like a straight shot of her like just staring into the camera, and it's like the most heartbreaking thing I've seen in a film all year. I think it's a brilliant film.
I agree.
It's not easy to watch, but for being such a simple, straightforward film, I think it's like the horror film of the year. Like it's incredible. One of my favorite films of the year, and it's on VOD. People should check it out. The Assistant. Do you see Palm Springs?
I did.
Nice. See, I also think this is like one of the most underrated films of the year, and people are even talking about it. Like, I think I love this film. I don't know why I love it, because it's such a film that's already been done before a couple times, and I shouldn't love this film as much as I did. But man, I've never thought of Andy Samberg as a leading man before.
Oh, you were so wrong there.
Well,
I'm a huge fan.
Don't talk about that movie about the motorbikes and stuff.
Hot Rod.
Damn it.
Had to be done. You brought it up.
Andy Samberg is great in this film.
But it's
as a Groundhog Day kind of copy. I think this one does a lot more than Groundhog Day.
I agree. Like, I mean, Groundhog Day has its moment in history. I'm not a huge fan of that movie. It just is what it is. I thought that this really, really worked. I love this concept that they're waking up day after day, but like you don't see the full story of what's happening until like partway through. And the chemistry between Samberg and Christy Milioti is so good. And when they start waking up with a smile on their face every day, that's just such a heartwarming kind of like romantic moment. I mean, in the short period of this movie, they basically live like an entire relationship, and it feels really authentic and real. I don't know. I really liked it. I thought it was wonderful. But what really got me was the chemistry between the two of them. And yeah, Andy Samberg clearly can do, you know, comedy and drama. And I'm in.
He's
just a friend.
There's no dick and fart jokes in this film either. It's incredibly well written. And there's a couple times in the film where I was just like, well, shit. I did not see that coming. That is great.
Yeah.
And J.K. Simmons is awesome.
Yes.
He always so is. This is like one of the most underrated films of the year that should be completely being talked about. It's only on Hulu, which really sucks. But check this one out. It is incredible. One of my favorite films of the year. And I didn't even know it existed until like 4 days ago. So it's really great. I love Palm Springs.
Yay.
First Cow.
Oh, I've been waiting for this. It feels like for a year. Has it been a year since we first heard about this movie?
Well, this was technically, I think, the last movie that opened before COVID.
Oh.
It opened for like 2 days, and then A24 pulled it. This is the best film of the year.
Yeah. Oh, I'm such a fan of Kelly Reichardt.
Yeah.
She can do no wrong by me.
Kelly Reichardt, for being such a no-namer to everybody in the world, is for like film people, is like such an A-lister in my books.
I agree.
Every one of her films is just incredible. This one is so great. I'm watching this film and I'm like, not only does she have the balls to like shoot natural light the entire film, which I thought was just incredible, there's this really amazing friendship between these two people and their plans to try to better themselves the entire film, and you know what's going to happen to them because it's shown in the first scene in the film.
Yep.
But the entire film, you're just like, hey, can that just not happen? These two are just so incredible. They're just let them be. They're this really nice people. And I love their relationship. The acting is great. Kelly Reichardt shoots the shit out of it.
Agreed.
And I think it's the best film of the year.
You know, the thing that I really appreciate about Kelly Reichardt, and she always works with the same co-writer, not always, but generally speaking, and now I can't remember his name, but this is based on, I think, a short story or a book that he wrote. The thing that gets me about her, the stories that she adapts, is she never takes the easy way out, and it's always unexpected. And the fact that they never steal the cow, like, that is never even something that they talk about. Like, that's never even a thought that enters their mind. They never think, let's steal the cow for ourselves.
Yeah.
It's just, let's steal the milk. Like, to me, that's just such a small thing that makes, like, the entire difference in the world. It just makes these people even more real, and you feel even more for them because they're good people just trying to do good by themselves.
And not only do they steal the milk, and while they're doing it, the guy talks to the cow like it's like his best friend. Yes. It's so wonderful.
It is. It's just such a smart, like, quiet, lovely movie. You know, I think that it might be too slow for some people. It's just the way it is. But I mean, if you've got the patience for it, it's just such a wonderful film. I loved it.
It almost feels like this is her probably most accessible film, though.
Oh, totally.
Like this is an Old Joy. Like this.
No, it's not Meek's Cut Off, which I love.
Meek's Cut Off has the greatest ending of all time by accident.
Yes.
She ran out of money.
Yep.
So the Indian just walked away.
Yep.
She had
so good.
She had another ending, but couldn't film it. So that was the ending.
Yeah, like I love this movie.
Yeah, she's incredible. First Cow, my favorite film of the year so far. Did you see the Old Guard on Netflix?
Oh, fuck. Yes, I did. You bet I did. Come on. Charlize Theron kicking ass. I'm all over that shit.
Yeah, it's good, but it has some problems.
I agree.
Yeah, it's but for being like a free Netflix film, I think it's pretty good. Charlize could make anybody great.
Yeah.
Including Seth Rogen. Like that. True. Like that movie is like way better than it should be just because Charlize just acts the hell out of it. And she's really great in the film. Matthias Schoenaerts is super underrated and should be in everything. He's really great. Chiwetel Ejiofor is really good. It's fun. I want to see where it goes next because I'm pretty sure they're going to keep on doing it.
Oh, for sure. Well, my major complaint about the movie is the action sequences are fantastic and the acting from the top talent is like pretty spot on. I think it fell short whenever they kind of went into like the history of how they are, what they are, was like really kind of messy and not really clear. And I wish they had more of a clear storyline for that. And I wanted to see more of Andy's background because she's obviously fucking ancient and I want to know all about that shit. Surprisingly, I have like zero interest in reading the comic book to find out. I just want to see the fucking movie.
So give me
a sequel.
And the villain wasn't as strong as it should have been.
No. It was like I think the concept for the villain was interesting, but yeah, I didn't think it fully worked.
Did you see Greyhound, the new?
No, I haven't Tom seen Hanks. Greyhound yet. No, is it good?
It's good, but it's not great. And it's really short. So if you have
88 minutes.
Yeah, that's with credits.
Oh shit.
It's like 82 minutes without credits.
Oh.
It's very quick. It's very tension filled and then it just absolutely freaking dies at the end.
Oh, too bad.
It's really strange how it just like tension, nothing. And then it's over. And I'm like, holy shit, that was really quick and it's pretty good, but man, it's not great. And Tom Hanks is amazing it's very quick if you have and kind of fun.
I want to see it. I think it suffered from the fact that both Palm Springs and First Cow came out this weekend. So that was like the last thing on my to watch list and I didn't get around to.
Yeah,
so
watch
this weekend.
Watch those ones first.
Exactly.
Did you watch Hamilton?
No.
Wow, you're that person.
I'm that person. So full admission, we did a movie night the other day, and we started with Palm Springs, and then we watched Eurovision, and then it was still kind of early, so we thought, well, let's try to give Hamilton a go. And I think we watched the first song, and then Dan was out cold. So I'm like, okay, so Hamilton is not for Dan. So I'll have to find some time to watch it at some point. It's just like 3 hours long. And I'm like, where the fuck am I going to find 3 hours for a musical? I'll watch it eventually, but.
There's a minute long intermission in there. Come on.
Oh, okay. So 2 hours and 44 minutes instead of 45.
It's really good. All the hype is real. I'm a metalhead, and I kind of like hip hop, but I'm kind of more into metal. And it got me. Like, I loved it. Lin-Manuel Miranda is really good, but David Diggs, who has been in a couple films, and the Snowpiercer TV show, is really amazing in it, playing Thomas Jefferson. Mm-hmm. He's so funny. It has a lot of humor, and I laughed a lot. And it has a lot of like feelings in it, and I was like, "Wow, why am I crying?" Like, it's really good. It's really worth your time, and I think it's there's a reason why people are really into it, because it's really damn good. And I believe the hype. It's really good. And my last one, I think you saw this one too, Relic.
Yes, I did.
Wow, this is a. This movie really got to me. It's genuinely freaky at times, and the body horror is really fucking gross.
Yep.
If you're not into body horror, this is not your film.
No.
Probably since Raw, the French film, have I like been this grossed out by body horror. And you want to know?
It is pretty bad.
And you want to know why? Because old people are gross.
We're all going to get there eventually.
No, but like the body horror is being done to an old woman.
Yeah, it's pretty intense. And I wouldn't say enjoy is the right word. I really appreciated this movie. I think the thing that I found most interesting was the sort of physical manifestation of like dementia, which I hadn't really seen done like this before. And it's super, super effective and really scary and really sad. And the performances are just fantastic.
Yeah, there's this scene where one of the characters is going down this like haunted hall, mm-hmm. and all you see is little like post-it note saying, "Your name is blah blah blah," and it's just like she walks a little further and she's like sees another post-it note, and I'm just like, "Oh my god!" And it's like all this like tension. I'm just like, "Oh my god, I hate this." Like oh my god, why am I so scared? This is, usually I don't get scared for horror films, but this one really worked for me. I don't know why. The ending is kind of dies.
Yeah.
It's a bit weak, but getting there is really good. I really like this one.
Yeah, agreed.
And that is it for me.
I have a couple more that we didn't talk about. Shirley, this is Josephine Decker's new film.
Shit, I saw that one too, actually.
Yeah, Madeline's Madeline.
Oh, Madeline's Madeline was a top five film for me that year.
Yeah, it's really good. So, and for that reason, I was a bit disappointed with Shirley. I mean, Elizabeth Moss is fantastic. And I love Shirley Jackson. But I don't know. Some of this didn't really work for me. I really couldn't get into it. I had a really hard time. And as much as I like the performance overall, I didn't care for it. It's just too messy. And they portray, I don't know anything about Shirley Jackson personally, but they portray her as like the biggest bitch this side of like the universe. And it just did not work for me in any way, shape or form. So I had a really, really difficult time with this one. It looks really fantastic. And Elizabeth Moss is like top notch, but the movie just for me was a mess.
I think I liked it a little more than you, but I also thought it was a mess. And yeah, Elizabeth Moss for everything. She's just amazing.
And then Athlete A, which is Bonnie Cohen and John Schenck's new documentary. They did The Rape of Europa a number of years ago, and Audrey and Daisy. So they make some pretty hard-hitting documentaries. This is about the USA Gymnastics Larry Nassar debacle. And it, basically they interview the Indianapolis Star reporters that broke the story. And it's really sad and shocking and disappointing. And in the end, it's super riveting as well. I mean, these women are, the survivors are amazing. The documentary is hard to watch at times, but it's really good. Really, really good. Especially if you're not familiar at all with what was going on there and what is happening with USA Gymnastics now. I'm a fan of gymnastics as far as like watching. So this was something that I've been following for a while. So it was really interesting to see a documentary on it.
I will check that out.
It
sounds
good. It's pretty decent. And then I couldn't help myself. I had to watch the new Joel Kinnaman, even though it's fucking terrible. I did see The Informer with Joel Kinnaman and Ana de Armas and Rosamund Pike, and Clive Owen is in it as well. It's totally like cookie cutter mobster movie. Joel Kinnaman is really good because he's always really compelling. And Ana de Armas looks very different with super curly hair. For a minute, I couldn't figure out who it was. And Clive Owen is just being a dick. So, hey, it all works.
I love Ana de Armas. Me too. Her performance in Knives Out last year should have been Oscar nominated.
Yeah, she's so good.
She's so incredible in that film.
And she popped up in a bunch of movies over the last couple of years. She sort of just exploded on the scene, and she's so watchable and so good in everything.
And she's like the weird heart and soul of Blade Runner.
Yes.
Yeah.
Very much so.
As that like AI that talks to Ryan Gosling all the time. It's such a great I love that film.
And then Dan and I did go out to the movies. We went to the drive-in.
Oh, sweet.
Yeah, so we were actually on our way islandside. We were literally on the ferry, and I get an email from the Twilight drive-in, and the double bill is Goonies and The Lost Boys. And I'm like, this shit is fucking happening. I want to see The Lost Boys on the big screen. And of course, you can't just go for one movie, so you go for both. So we watched Goonies, followed by The Lost Boys, and it was so glorious. Jason Patrick and Kiefer Sutherland.
Okay, so how did it work? You drove in. Did they have speakers, or did you go through your car radio?
Oh no,
or?
It's not the first time we've been to the drive-in, though. It's been the first time in a couple of years since we've been, but it hasn't really changed. The new drive-in is the new old drive-in. They do have like a big Christie projector. Like, it looks really, really nice. The picture is sharp, super clear. Wow. They have speakers for if you're sitting outside of your car. And then you can also tune in. They have two different radio stations that you can tune into to hear the movie. Like, they recommend that you stay in your vehicle, and they have like very, very limited. They're like at half capacity. They're only parking one car in a stall that's usually for two cars. And they recommend that you stay in your car, though a lot of people still sit outside. But yeah, it's totally like, it's the safest I've felt going to the movies. And quite honestly, if they showed Tenet at the drive-in, I would fucking go to that.
Nice.
Give me all the movies at the drive-in and I will go to the drive-in.
So
it was fun.
It's not like an outside grindhouse.
No, not at all.
I kind of think of drive-ins as kind of like dirty, like scummy.
Bad
projection, bad sound.
No, the projection is great. I mean, the sound is always only going to be as good as the sound in your car. We have fairly decent speakers, but I mean, you're never going to get the experience. But I mean, you're in your car with your windows rolled up. The sound is not bad in there. It's basically you're sitting in a box. So you're not getting your Dolby Atmos 7.1 surround, but you know, give and take, it's still like, it was like a great experience to go and to watch that on the big screen, at least bigger than I have on my TV. And I have a fairly large television, but, you know, it's not the same as like a 110-foot screen or whatever the size of the screen at the drive-in is.
Well, that's cool.
Yeah, and some movies are just like perfect for the drive-in. So Goonies was great, but The Lost Boys is where it's at, man.
I I bet you enjoyed the Coreys and Kiefer Sutherland and with fangs and
Nothing is better than the sweaty saxophone player on the beach. That is the fucking scene right there. And I said to Dan, you know, what is it with 80s movies and topless men on the beach scenes? There's like a thing here.
Lost Boys, is that Joel Schumacher?
Hell yeah.
Nice. Yeah, I thought so.
Yeah, it's so good. Yeah. So good. I really, it's like one of my favorites. So when I saw that, I'm like, we have to go to the drive-in to the movies. Wicked. So we had a really good time. If we weren't working on Monday, we would have gone on Sunday night. They had a double bill of Star Wars. I can't remember which one it was. I don't remember, but Dan was pretty excited. So it was Star Wars and then The Wrath of Khan.
Oh, nice.
Yeah, that would have been pretty great.
Did you see the box office for this weekend?
No, but it's been the box office of Steven Spielberg for the last couple of weeks. So does that continue?
The number one film of the weekend was The Empire Strikes Back.
Oh, there you go.
Yes.
Crazy.
Is that it for your? Is that it for your movies?
Yeah, that's it for my movies.
Nice.
That I care to speak of.
You probably watched some Netflix movie you're embarrassed about.
No, but there were a couple of other movies that probably aren't good enough to mention. To be totally honest, some forgettable stuff.
It's all good.
So what you got for TV?
I haven't been watching a lot of TV, but I watched a couple things. Did you watch Warrior Nun?
Not yet, but it's on my watch list.
It's okay. It's when it hits, it's really good, but it's really bloated. It's not as good as his other show is either. Simon Barry.
Yeah, he's great. Continuum is great.
Yeah, I really like that show. But yeah, it's okay. I like the lead. It's just Buffy with more people, which is pretty hard to screw up. I'll watch the second season if that's enough of a recommendation. The 100 sucks.
Oh, fuck you.
I'm more or less hate watching it now.
Oh, you're so not. No.
Yeah, it's so off the rails. There's like multiple dimensions and fucking people.
Okay, it's been off the rails for the last couple of seasons.
I know.
You have to buy into that.
No, but this has gotten really stupid. You have to admit.
No, I mean, I am having a hard time following where everyone is because now they're traveling within the dimensions. I was kind of hoping that the flashback episode that they were toting, the Anaconda, which they aired, I guess, last week, I hoped that would sort of clear things up, and it really did not. It just sort of confused things even more for me, and I kind of feel like I need to rewatch bits and pieces of certain episodes to kind of get the whole gist of it. But I'm still really, really liking the show. I mean, I like the show a lot, way more than I probably should. But fuck, just give me all the 100, and I can't believe it's the last season.
That Anaconda episode was a pilot for a new show.
Oh, okay. Well, I could see that happening.
Yeah,
I don't know. I'm not sure if I'm. Oh well. Yeah, I'd be into that.
He's trying to get that show made.
Yeah, I'd watch it.
Yeah. I just hope that the ending is good and makes sense. And I'm glad it's over and I can stop watching the 100.
I will be sad.
I know. Here's my guilty pleasure of the show. I really like the show Bering Sea Gold.
Oh yes,
I love that show, and yep. it's almost over for this season. I just like watching people go underwater and suck gold from the Bering Sea, and they're all a bunch of weird people, and they have really funny stories, and
yes.
it's a fun show.
Dan and I watch that, and we watch the one about the crab fishing, the name of which I can't remember.
Deadliest Catch.
Yeah, Deadliest Catch. Those are the two. Oh, and Dan watches the highway rescue one too, which I can't remember the name of
either. Oh yeah, I don't watch that one.
Yeah, he watches all of those. I'm more into the Bering Sea Gold one, though I haven't seen. We usually like pile up a bunch of episodes and then we'll watch them over a period of a couple of days. So that's next on the watch list.
Yeah, they're fun. Just because The Last Dance, if it was a movie, it would be my number one film of the year.
It's really good. I agree.
It's really great. It's just, I'm still shocked that Michael Jordan let that footage come out.
You know, I mean, at this point, he doesn't really have anything to lose.
I know, but it just makes him look really terrible.
And I don't know. I think it makes him look human.
I don't know.
He's always been this kind of untouchable figure that never did anything wrong, at least in the eyes of many people. And I mean, from the little that I followed basketball, he always seemed like the star and the guy that was unbeatable. And I thought that the show really brought some humanity to him and made him more of like, you know, an actual person and not some sports god. I thought that that was really, really interesting. The most, probably one of the most fascinating things I saw about that was there was some commentary from, oh shit, now I'm not going to remember the director's name. Okay, check the show notes. I'll add it to the show notes. He had mentioned that he was he thought it was interesting that it was never mentioned, or at least publicly, that they didn't make a bigger deal of the fact that Michael Jordan is actually an executive producer on the show as well. And he thought that that was Alex Gibney. Yeah, he was commenting about the fact that he didn't think that that was really visible, and he thought that was a bit of a conflict of interest, and he would have liked to see that more publicly made, like that was out there. Not that they were trying to hide it, but they certainly didn't highlight that part, which I thought was an interesting observation, which I hadn't certainly not picked up on. But overall, I think the show is like really, really good and super compelling television, even if you're not a basketball fan.
I was just shocked at how much he bullied people.
Oh, yeah. But I mean, it works towards like, that still just helps this idea that he's a human being and his one goal was to win.
Yeah.
To win at any cost. I mean, he never hurt anybody physically, but yeah, like the bullying was crazy, crazy. It does make him look like a bit of an asshole, but you know, he was the sports god. So I thought it was really interesting. That dichotomy.
And Better Call Saul is incredible and nobody watches it and it drives me nuts.
Oh no. Dan and I watch that shit as it airs. It is so good.
Yeah, the season just ended a little while ago, and I hadn't watched it, and I watched it straight, like 10 straight hours.
That's
and
crazy.
Because I couldn't stop. It's just so incredible. It's better than Breaking Bad. I don't care what anybody says. Better Call Saul is better than Breaking Bad.
I could go with that.
Yeah, it's Bob Odenkirk is incredible. Everybody in the show is incredible. Watch Better Call Saul. It's on freaking Netflix. Just watch it and tell me it's not better than Breaking Bad.
I agree. And I mean, I think Bob Odenkirk was a huge discovery. I mean, he was so good in Breaking Bad and I'd never really seen him in anything before. And then when they announced that spinoff, like, I mean, clearly the character is really, really interesting, but it's interesting because he's really good.
Yeah.
And so the fact that he manages to carry the show is not surprising. But the show is so tight and so well written, and just the performances are so great. I love it. It's such a good show, and I highly recommend it as well. I think, you know, no excuse not to see it. Everybody's got fucking Netflix. Just binge that shit.
And my last show is just a reminder. Watch The Magicians. It's amazing.
Okay, I will.
Thank you.
I promise. between you and Dale, you're my barometer.
I actually haven't watched the last episode yet.
Oh, you're way okay. So full admission, I have the last episode of the Wachowski show. I can't remember the name of it off the top of my head. I still haven't watched like the 90-minute like last episode that they released, I think last year.
Yeah.
So I'm just waiting for that really, really, really bad day where I need to pick me up.
Yeah, I just don't want it to end. So I'm just not going to watch the final episode. It's great. I'm weird. But yeah, that's it for me for TV.
I've got a few things. I didn't even realize they had put this on Netflix because I don't check it every day. So somebody had mentioned there had been a list about the best shows currently on Netflix that people aren't watching. And one of them was a show about cheerleaders called Cheer. It's a docuseries. It's 6 episodes. I'm like, it's a show about fucking cheerleaders. Of course this is made for me. And I binged the shit out of the show. I watched the entire 6 hours in like 2 sittings. It's so good. I cannot wait to see more. So it's a documentary / reality series about the Navarro College cheerleading squad, which is considered one of the best cheerleading squads in the country. And it's exactly what you think it is. It's a reality show about cheerleaders. And it's amazing.
Spartan spirit.
So much better. So good, though. Highly, highly, highly recommended. Watchmen. I finally watched Watchmen.
Oh, how? What?
Yes. So we had had this waiting for when we needed something new to watch because we had been watching so much stuff. So Dan and I had kind of saved this, and a few weeks back we had kind of a lull on our TV watching. We're like, okay, we're finally going to watch this show, and I swear to God, it is even more prescient now than it was when it came out, like last year. It's stupidly, like, shockingly amazing. I mean, it's so good. I think it could be maybe the best thing Lindelof has ever done, and he's done some good things. And just some of that, like, the whole Tulsa episode, I was like, is this for real? Did this actually happen? And then I, like, literally paused the show. I'm like, Google this shit. It was amazing.
Yeah.
Just amazing. Regina King is great. The entire cast is amazing. The set score is superb. The show is like top notch. They have to make more.
But they're not.
But they have to.
I know, but they're not. And it sucks. But they have to. And it sucks because it's incredible. Yeah. Everything you just said.
So good.
And Louis Gossett Jr.
Yes. So good.
So good. Yeah. Watchmen is incredible. I bought that on Blu-ray.
Oh, and are there any good extras on that?
I haven't actually opened it yet, but okay. I never buy TV on like Blu-ray because it's like on Netflix or whatever. But yeah. I bought Watchmen.
Yeah.
It's incredible.
It's so good. So, so good. How to Fix a Drug Scandal. This is also a Netflix limited series, I guess. It's a 3-hour documentary film for all intents and purposes about the two of the major crime labs in Massachusetts were each hit by a scandal that basically invalidated like 10 years of drug testing and the cases that were involved with those drug tests. Just like they just happened to come out at about the same time. One of them was a woman that was basically lying on the test, like when she was performing the tests, a chemist. And the other chemist was basically using the drugs that they used to test drugs against for her own personal use at the office. Like she was smoking crack, heroin. Like it's insane.
Why haven't I watched this?
It's like mind-blowing, especially when you realize that it affects the two major crime labs that cover the entire state.
Wow.
So literally like tens of thousands of cases are now in jeopardy. And this is like now an ongoing thing because maybe most of those cases have to be retested. There could be people in prison that don't belong there.
Wow.
It's insane. It's totally insane.
I will check that out.
And it's only like 3.5 hours long, so it's totally worth watching.
Cool.
I finally cleared this off my watch list. 13 Reasons Why, season 3 and 4.
I turned on season 3 and remembered how much I hated season 2 and turned it off.
I actually thought the first 2 seasons were quite good. Season 3, I thought, was kind of in line with seasons 1 and 2. But honestly, the show didn't need to go on past season 1, to be like completely honest. Season 1 is really great and on its own, I think, stands really well. The last season, season 4, is a fucking disaster and a half.
Really?
There's like, ew, it's so off the wall. Like there's like nightmares and dead people coming back to life and ghosts. What? And oh, it's stupid. Nobody actually comes back to life, but one of the characters has a mental break and the whole thing just goes to shit.
This is a bit of a spoiler, but fuck it. Does anybody get raped with a broom in season 4? Like, honestly, I hated
season 2. I think that happened in one of the earlier
seasons. Yeah, I know. I hated season 2. Yeah. Hated it. Like, all I could think about was, like, kids are watching this.
Oh, yeah.
And, like, it was, like, a cool show for kids to watch. And I'm like, you're really doing this. Okay. Yeah. Okay. That's really great. Yeah, the first season was really good. That just died. I hate that show now.
Yeah, I really needed to clear it off my watch list. So I did actually finish watching it, but I wouldn't say I recommend it.
The only thing good about that show is that Katherine Langford is a freaking star.
Double that.
Yeah.
She's great.
She got that show coming out on Friday on Netflix, that medieval show. I forget what it's called.
Oh, you know, that's got my name written on
it. Yeah, it looks really good. So I'll be watching that.
And then finally, Snowpiercer season 1. So I have very mixed feelings about this. I thought the first 2 episodes were pretty decent. And then the show was a snoozer for the last, I don't know, like the middle half is just not great. And then the last 2 episodes really fucking surprised me because the show won me back. And that final episode, like the last 20 minutes, I'm like, yeah, give me season 2, like now. It's kind of all over the map, but generally speaking, I actually did enjoy it. And I like some of the politics that they get into. But yeah, the ending of the last episode really sold me for another season. We'll see if the second season is better overall, because this one is very sort of hit and miss, I thought.
Yeah, so I had the same thing with you. I turned it off, though, in those snoozer episodes and didn't watch the rest. So now that you say it's good, I will finish it.
The last episode in particular, the setup for season 2 is really good, I thought. I mean, I certainly didn't see it coming, and I'm curious to see where they take it, but I'm in.
Cool.
I'm all in.
Cool.
And that's all the TV I got.
Nice.
What else you got? You have some books or movie or podcasts? What do you got?
I only have one book, but goddamn, is it a book? It's one of those books that you're going to be hearing about. Did you know that Charlie Kaufman wrote a book?
Oh, I did hear that Charlie Kaufman
wrote a book. It just came out. It's called Ant Kind. It's like 700 pages of just sprawling, rambling Charlie Kaufman. If you've ever seen his movies, you know exactly what I'm talking about. It's about a film critic who watches a 2-month-long movie and thinks that it's the greatest movie ever made, and he wants to show it to the people. So he packs it up in a U-Haul, takes it to his house, but on the way, it catches on fire, and it's the only print of the film ever made. So he decides he's going to go through hypnosis to try to remember the entire film and reshoot it. Charlie Kaufman.
Sounds like, I wonder if he just couldn't get this made.
Exactly. But it's kind of strangely readable because it's Charlie Kaufman. It's strange, but good. I don't have much to say about it. I'm only about 200 pages into it, but man.
Oh, God. How long is this tome?
700 pages. But
for fuck's sake. It's
almost like the David Foster Wallace book, Infinite Jest. It's very strange and weird and hard to read, but it's Charlie Kaufman, so I'm reading it. But that's my book.
You're a braver man than me.
Yeah.
I'm still trying to read the book that I've been trying to read for a month and a half, so I won't go there.
Nice.
What do you got for podcasts?
Have you been listening to Roger Deakins' podcast? The
Deakins has a podcast.
Roger Deakins has a podcast.
Holy shit, no.
Yeah, my favorite cinematographer of all time has a podcast where he interviews people like Denis Villeneuve and the people that run the Criterion Collection.
What's this thing called?
Team Deakins.
Okay, I'm adding it as we speak.
on the Denis Villeneuve podcast, Roger Deakins yells at him for watching Terrence Malick films on his iPhone. It's quite interesting.
That's hilarious. Oh, that's glorious.
Yeah, it's really, really great. And the other podcast I want to talk about was our main film festival, VIFF, has a podcast now. They have four episodes out. They have it's Michael Moore, RZA, and you saw Cliff Martinez.
I did.
They have that as a podcast now, and it's somebody else. But they every year at VIFF they have these special talks, and I guess they're putting it out in podcast form now. So oh, that's cool. I thought I'd pimp that a little bit. But that's it for me.
Yeah, I thought the Cliff Martinez one, I mean, because I was there. It was amazing, just saying.
Yeah.
It was a really, really fascinating discussion about composition and working with Nicholas Winding Refn. I really, really enjoyed that talk.
Cool. But
then I'm kind of a music geek when it comes to cinema, soundtracks, so I was all over that shit. I bought my ticket as soon as they announced it.
Cliff Martinez's score for Drive and The Neon Demon are quite possibly one of the two great ones of the last 10 years.
I could go with that, yeah.
Yeah.
I'm not as keen on The Neon Demon, but Drive for sure.
Yeah. But yeah, that's it for me for podcasts and books.
I have nothing else to add to this discussion.
Wow. No Clive Cussler, no nothing.
No Clive Cussler. Well, you know, I will say this. I'm partway through. I've been trying to clear shit off my PVR because it's like at 98% full.
Wow. Yes,
I still have cable and I still PVR shit because sometimes it's just easier than trying to find it elsewhere. So I did finally watch the last two episodes of Outlander to finish off.
Oh my God.
I know. I'm that girl. Yeah, so that happened. And Jamie Fraser forever. And I've started watching Sanditon. I can't help myself, okay? I really can't help myself. I really like now I can't remember his name. Oh my God, I can't remember his name.
I've never watched that show, so I can't help you.
Okay, hold on. I have to look it up now. Because I also recently saw a really great movie with him. What is his name? Theo James.
Oh, yeah. I know who he is.
Yeah. So, actually, one of the movies that I watched recently that I didn't mention, and I say I didn't mention because I actually saw this before the movie's premiere at South by Southwest, and then South by Southwest never happened. So, Archive is this, like, really kind of neat movie about like AI, and Theo James plays this dude that is developing robots that he's trying to basically download his wife's memories into. So this is the basic concept of the movie. And Theo
nothing will go wrong.
Nothing will go wrong, obviously. But Theo James acts literally against some robots. And I mean, I've always liked him, but you know, he's kind of just like this good-looking chap that's in these somewhat interesting movies. But he's actually really good in Archive. And I mean, I liked him in he did that franchise that sort of
Divergent and Insurgent.
Yeah,
and
those ones. And he was like, you know, the handsome bloke in that one. But he's really good in Archive. And then I thought, well, you know, I had taped Sanditon because he's also in it. And I thought, well, that's different. And he's super good. I mean, he's very handsome, but super charismatic and very smart. And, you know, it's Jane Austen, man. I fucking can't help myself. I have this thing. I can't help it.
Hey, I like Jane Austen.
So you might like Sanditon.
Yeah, you never know.
It's an adaptation of her last unfinished manuscript. I think she'd only written like a part of it. So Sir Andrew Davies has adapted the story. It's like 10 episodes. It was on Masterpiece in like January. So yeah, I PVR Masterpiece. It is what it is. So I'm currently binging that on my spare time.
So some English dude adapted Jane Austen.
Yeah,
okay.
Yeah.
We'll go with that.
Yeah. It wasn't some English lady.
Yeah, exactly.
It is an English dude.
Yeah.
Like, admittedly, he's got cred, so, you know, it is. It's not like it's just some Joe Blow off the street. Andrew Davies has adapted a lot of shit over his years, and he's pretty good at it. So, hey, there's that. But yes, I have started watching that, and so far it's very charming and
cool.
Enjoyable.
Cool.
But now that's all I got.
Yeah, that's all I got too.
So come on by atcpod.ca. We will put links to all the things we talked about today in the show notes. Bill, thank you so much for joining me today. I super appreciate it. It was so nice to catch up and to talk movies and TV with you, as always.
Yeah, let's do it again.
We will very soon. And until next time, we'll see you after the credits. Opening and closing credits are Arcadia by composer Kevin MacLeod, used under a Creative Commons license. For more information, visit incompetech.com.